Well, Paul, that was an excellent overview. I think that there's, I would have to guess there's people out there going, wow, I guess it can work. So I think you're a trailblazer that way. Thank you for sharing that with folks today.
Glad to.
And if folks have follow-up questions for Paul, maybe put them in the chat because of how our call-in system works here. We wouldn't be able to get another line open, but thank you, Paul.
Yeah, and in the chat I put my phone number if anybody wants to call me to discuss it.
Excellent. Excellent.
Thanks.
Thank you, Paul.
Our next question comes from the line of John Duplessis. Please proceed.
Hi, how you doing today?
Hey, great. John, how you doing?
Okay, great. Listen, I was part of that DPN initiative as well. I was a navigator working with the state program navigator. We were, from the beginning to the start, we trained the career center staff, and we got services in there that they were needing for people with various disabilities, the deaf, the blind, and so forth. And as an employment network now, the only issue that I see that, you know, as an employment network going into the agencies is that we have a vocational rehab counselor that is stationed in our career centers.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, if someone comes in with a disability and they're needing some assistance, as an employment network, we really have to coordinate with the career counselors because, you know, with the vocational rehab counselors being in the career center stationed there, yeah, we don't necessarily have to be there presently all the time. However, I've seen a great partnership by them being there because we have to send some of our consumers in there that may be needing some vocational rehab services. And they're able to access those services immediately. But also, you know, getting them registered on the job resume link and getting registered on the various services that employers are looking for has been very successful. So I find that the career centers are useful tools, and especially with the counselors being there as well, it's a great partnership.
Well, John, I appreciate those comments, and I have to agree, having lived in the AJC for a decade, I do see the value of that. But you know, I also think that it's more than just the center. It is about people accessing multiple services, and it isn't maybe just our center or a private organization or even just VR, right? So I think your points are well taken. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
There are no further questions at this time.
This is Felix. Kevin, there's a question from Alana in the chat where she's asking, as a workforce EN, how would we proceed in partnering with other ENs to share clients? Are there any standard ticket to work forms that are used for this type of partnership? How do we proceed in partnering with other ENs to split payments? So I guess we've talked a little bit about how an EN might proceed, but from yours, from the AJC standpoint, that is an EN, how might they start to reach out?
Well, you know, I think there's two things we can talk about here. Maybe I'll let Felix talk about, you know, if you're talking specifically about split payments, that's one
sure.
way to do business. Or you can really develop an agreement locally as the AJC or the CBO. And arrange, you know, so I think, let me just reread this a second, Felix. So with another EN, right? So, you know, like Paul shared, I think, Alana, this is a good example because in his situation, it was the same. You've got a workforce EN, you got a private EN. And so what they did is they would alternate the assignment of tickets. You could develop an arrangement where, say, you, the workforce EN, actually assign, you know, maybe tickets for a period of time. And you have a written agreement where you maybe pay for certain services and or split payments. So that's more of the local agreement that you could work out. You could get more formal and just have payments split. Actually, OSM can do that, and I'll let Felix address that. But there's a lot of different ways, and there's no difference if you start this conversation from the seat of the workforce EN or from the private or CBO EN. It can be done either way. but maybe Felix can shed some light a little bit on the split payment process.
Sure. Before I do that, though, I'll say one thing. Alana, you asked whether or not there are any standard ticket to work forms that we use in this type of partnership. Beyond those related directly to splitting payments, the answer is really no, there aren't. However, I think, and the reason for that is that I don't know that we'd be able to create a form or a template that would account for all the various possibilities of how a workforce EN and a private EN might collaborate. And so it may be that there are folks on this call that do have these types of relationships that might be willing to share their memorandums of understanding that they've created or shared at least some of the details of their agreements. So I'll let those folks chime in or kind of let you kind of touch base offline if you'd like. I mean, Paul just put his phone number right out there, so you might want to give him a call. But to the question about split payments, one of the ways that you can arrange this is that if the ticket is one way is to handle that split totally between the two organizations. That's to say that if you as the workforce EN are going to have the ticket assignment and they're going to maybe get services from a local a private EN that you can't provide and you'd be paying for that, maybe that would be a way to split the payment. You'd receive an EN payment or use those EN payments as a way to offset the cost of the services you're purchasing from this local EN. But if you're going to have, and even if you, the ticket is assigned with you and then you kind of hand off, do kind of a handoff situation where the ticket moves to this local EN directly, then the ticket is assigned to them, you could still agree that, you know, that there's some sharing of the revenue going on. But if you don't kind of want to have that hassle, we can split the payment for you on our side at the operations support manager as we're making the payment create some kind of a split. And in order to do that, the ticket does need to be a situation where it was assigned to one of you and now it is assigned to the other. It wouldn't really matter which one was first and which one was second. As long as it was assigned to one and then assigned to the other, we can split any future payments. The original entity maintaining the assignment would only be able to receive, they'd receive payments, of course, prior to the ticket movement. The second EN would only be able to get a portion of the payments that were for claim months after the ticket moved. So if you want to split all the payments, both before and after the tickets move from one to the other, you'd need to do that kind of on your own internally. But if you do want us to split, we can do that, and there are standard forms we use for those payment splits. In fact, in any situation where we are running or we're processing a payment and we see that ticket was previously assigned to another employment network, we contact both entities and with a form that they can fill out, and we encourage the entities to work together to decide on a percentage split. Usually that's a percentage split of any ongoing payments. The rationale being that the work that the first EN did has had some lasting impact and has had some contribution to the sustaining employment the beneficiary has. In cases where there isn't a partnership and there isn't collaboration, we then make that split determination internally based on your service records. But what we're talking about today is you would then work together, decide, okay, well, we're going to take a 50-50 split or 60-40 or whatever you decide what it is. Or we could even do, you know, the next two payments are going to go to the one EN and then all the other payments will be split. However you want to do it, let us know that on this form that we would send you, and we would do that split moving forward on our side. So the money would just be directed thusly to each of your accounts. But that's just one of the ways that you can share revenue or partner.
Thank you, Felix. And Alana, I would definitely take up Paul on that offer because it mimics what you're asking there. But certainly I have a another agreement I'd be willing to share, too, if you were to contact me offline. My contact information is at the end of the PowerPoint.
And just for clarity's sake, that would be picking up Paul on an offer that Felix made on his behalf.
Okay, well, Frank, are there any more questions?
There are no further questions at this time.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next slide then and talk a little bit more and expand upon what was discussed in the last COP, again by Pam, but I was really intrigued by this and looked at it more closely. And this is the System for Award Management. And it really is a site created to combine, and I pulled this from their site, federal procurement systems and the catalog of federal domestic assistance into one system. But what it really means is that if federal contractors have to register this on the site when they're doing business with the government, just like we do as ENs in order to be paid. But what's interesting about this site is that it can be used to search for federal contractors within a geographic region. And below is where you actually find the site, pretty simple. So the next slides I put together show you really how you can use this site, though, for the purposes of what we're trying to get to today. And the first thing you should know is that when you go to that site, and it's pretty obvious, okay, how you get to this, but you need to choose the advanced search feature. Now, in this picture, it didn't show exactly, I don't know why, the entries that I put in here, but where it says city, so the first on the left there, you see it says location. I clicked that box, and I checked off location, and then I chose Ithaca and New York, which is where I work. And then I also made sure that the registration link at the top says active registrations. So once I did that, if we go to the next slide, this is what it gave me. There's another piece of the puzzle. So also I recommend that you check the entity type. And so you might have to scroll a little bit down on your screen to see the whole slide here. But what I was real interested in, just curious, was, you know, what entities were in this area that are other than government entities. So I chose other type of entity, and I actually checked off limited liability company, and it's so small to see, I can hardly see it, but manufacturer of goods was another checkbox that you can't see there unless you scroll down. But those were the choices that I made. Okay, and we can move on. So just remember, choose active registrations. Now, out of that, what came out of that was all this information. How interesting is this, right? So now we've got a way to use SAM not only to get paid, which we like, but also to find folks in our area that would be having to register because of having federal contracts. So here's a partial list. You could see in this case there was 35 records in here. And there's also that click. You can click on where it says view details. It tells you a little bit more about that entity, but regardless, now you've got sort of a business name. You know they're active in this, right, because we checked that, and you know where they're located, and from that it's pretty easy then to dig into, how do I communicate with that company. So that's just an interesting way to use SAM for our purposes to find folks in our areas that are handling federal contracts. Also, the National Labor Exchange is another way. I've played with this a little bit. What it is this sophisticated electronic labor exchange network, and it is right off their site as well, that was created in 2007. It is a partnership between the National Association of State Workforce Agencies and Direct Employers Association. Some facts about this. It does make it pretty interesting and seamless. It does make sure that these are unduplicated and currently available jobs. And the next bullet talks about how it collects and distributes openings exclusively found on corporate career websites and state job banks. So maybe that does help part of Ian's question. It does not spider third-party sites, so these are unique job leads. And they're refreshed and shared with states daily. I took those facts from the website where there's a link here at the bottom. That's the homepage for the National Labor Exchange, and that's where it can be found. And if we go to the next slide, the reason I'm showing you this is that I think you can use this to some degree, with some success, I think, to find another way to find folks that are federal contractors in your area. So, again, what I did is I just put in some key words in the search area there, federal and contractor, right? And, again, I looked in Ithaca, and I just left it within a 25-mile radius. And when I did that search, you can see at the bottom where I have a job lead circled in that's close by, and that's definitely within that radius, that inventory taker. So then I clicked on that, and the next slide shows us what, well, I didn't show the whole job lead here, but what I did show you is what is most important for you to be looking at to see if you were successful in finding somebody who's a federal contractor. And there, sure enough, using this basic search, just using the federal contractor and the geographic location can often yield search results that will help you find those federal contractors. And what I have circled there is important for you to look for, so VEBRA and federal contractor, right? So that's just an interesting way, and I know this has also been talked about by others. I know Susan and Pam, I think, both talked about this as a resource. Is it perfect? No. But this is just another tool in your toolkit that you can use to find, you know, employers in your area, and then, you know, get on the horn and call those folks. Now, with that, and we will open up the lines again in a moment for questions, but what I'd like to do is call upon a colleague of mine who I have in the wings and who I prepared some questions for. And her name is Lynn Page, and Lynn is the employment and training professional and former DPN, now the EN specialist and ticket to work advisor with CSS Workforce here in New York. And Lynn is recognized as a possibility thinker, I love that, who provides innovative solutions that enhance opportunities for job seekers, navigating systems and the process, and processes, I'm sorry, with the goal of identifying, preparing for, obtaining, and maintaining the most meaningful employment possible. And I have known Lynn for many years under Navigator, and I can tell you she is a busy lady and has done many good things with folks and helping them look at, you know, federal jobs. And with that, I'm going to – Lynn, are you there? Are you on the line now? Are you unmuted?
I am here, Kevin, and thank you so much. You know, I just want to say I'm excited and I am challenged to hear the questions and also practices that are working for other folks.
Well, these are challenging folks. I mean, they ask challenging questions is what I meant to say. But seriously, Lynn, I'm just going to, you know, not pretend here. I provided Lynn a series of questions that I thought would intrigue you folks today, and I'm going to pose these questions to Lynn and let her respond, and then from that I'm hoping that there'll be a little bit more dialogue from you, our audience, today. So, Lynn, I would like you maybe to first address how did you make connections with some federal contractors in your area?
Well, actually, at the beginning it was really by accident, and now it's definitely intentional. I started out by finding contacts right from the USA job postings. When you find a position and you open that up, you're going to find agency contact information, and those folks have always been really helpful, and they are decision makers. So it would be really good to build some relationships with the folks that are on as the agency contact information on the USA job.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you. I know this has come up in the past. We've talked about this, but how engaged is your business service rep, would you say, with you in parsing out leads?
My business services rep, I really engage. I'll have to say, I think, in a little different fashion. I really engage with my business services representatives to gain insight into local business item agendas such as forecasting, growth, trends, developments, demands, occupational demands, skill set demands, contact information for companies, such as what is the communications style and the leadership style of the folks in management or recruiting and hiring or decision making so that I can build relationships even, you know, with those businesses.
Awesome.
I think the better for myself in my region, and I do cover five, and I'm going to say one stop. I'm still New York State. But with the American Job Centers, I actually work out of five centers. So I really build strong relationships with the functional supervisors or the center managers. They really need to know who you are and the services you provide that can benefit the folks that they serve in their center.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a similar point, and that you agree that really making that connection to the center manager is a good first step then, yes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. You know, and it's been said, never underestimate the power of a conversation. A conversation is both ways of providing information and also listening to them and what their needs are to build that relationship.
Good point, Lynn. I can't agree more with that. So in terms of the BSR, how much do you think that your business service rep really might know about Section 503? And I'm not trying to be unfair here, but just in general, you know, I mean, it's kind of new. Do you think, where do you think they're at with that?
You know, certainly in my area, I do think, and again, sometimes I do better with facts and evidence, but I think that facts and evidence are there. But I think that the BSRs are knowledgeable. And I think that really can be proven in the fact that they actually do reach out to me, and they also conduct referrals to me. However, if you think the BSRs are not knowledgeable in your area, this could be a topic to build or solidify that relationship with them, engaging in a brief conversation, how you've been educating yourself on the new regulations and offering services, or reminding them of the services you provide to job seekers with disabilities.
Right. So don't assume, but it's good to, again, have build that relationship and find out, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know, this came up today, but I'd like, you know, kind of your perspective, Lynn, because I haven't mentioned this yet, but we get more into this because Lynn's very much engaged in Employment Network Services too. But how do you think your BSR and or center manager would respond to a private EN coming in and asking to share contractor leads and or, you know, talk to the business service representative about what they do and what they're trying to accomplish with their customers?
Well, actually, I would have to describe CSS Workforce as a a standalone EN, and we actually really work well together. I think it's all about relationship, and again, reflecting back to the functional supervisor or the center manager, they need to know who you are and what services you provide. I'm very engaged with the staff and partners in the local American Job Centers. And actually, they do, again, they reach out to me, and it all comes down to being a choice for the beneficiary. And I'm kind of getting ahead of myself on that, but when you have that relationship with the one-stop center, but the American Job Centers, when you have the relationship and they know that you're going to provide the best service, and if you feel there's another EN that's going to provide better service, you're going to be conducting that referral to that other, because it's one thing to provide services to individuals with disabilities, but it's truly another to be an expert.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, back to Paul's point, I gotta believe, Lynn, that didn't happen overnight, that you play so well in the sandbox together in your area.
I started in 2006 as the DPN, traveling and navigating through all five centers, building those relationships. So when we became an employment network, I had those relationships established. It does take time, particularly if you're traveling to five. But what a person can do in a week at one stop, it would take me nearly 6 weeks.
Right.
So over a period of time, building those relationships and being trusted by all of the Career Center staff, they know that I am going to be doing that referral to whoever can provide the best service, because I can pick that ticket up at the end of their time to continue services.
Exactly. Well, these are good responses, Lynn. I do remember from the DPM days you having the most centers, and I always felt for you because that is a lot of effort to have coverage in multiple centers, and that was often the case with our navigators. But you had the most that I recall. So in terms of, how do you handle partnering? And we talked a little bit about this today, too, when there's a private EN and a workforce EN in the same region of coverage. So you sort of alluded to some of this, but maybe you can expand on that.
Absolutely. Once again, it's about choice to the beneficiary. So it's connecting the right people, to provide the right services for the best outcome for the beneficiary. I braid my services with other ENs and state agencies, again, for that reason that it's one thing to provide services to individuals with disabilities, but it's another to be an expert. And sometimes I may need the expert, and sometimes I may be that expert, but I'm going to get that beneficiary to the best services. I may also need the signature authority. I know someone on the call was talking about their signature authority. I may at times need that signature authority for Schedule A hiring. So that's only going to benefit the beneficiary.
Well, and I'm latching on to something you said, Lynn, that I agree wholeheartedly with, that it's really about what's best for a customer. And so that often helps to sort out, I think, and in my opinion, some of these issues of, having multiple providers in an area, because, I'm going back to the DEI and thinking about how we handled this, and we always looked at the customer needs. And if it was somebody that was better served primarily by another partner agency, and then having us as a partner, that was fine. So I appreciate that you feel that way too. So Lynn, you alluded to Schedule A. Can you tell me a little bit, maybe more about how have you done helping folks acquire federal employment through Schedule A, and maybe people just don't know what that is. So maybe you just talk a little bit about that.
I have achieved great success in the Schedule A hiring. It's actually one of my passions. It is Schedule A hiring. The federal government gives additional considerations for individuals with disabilities for positions that are posted, as well as they have special appointing authority for persons with disabilities in which they could obtain a position without competing with other applicants. So in that, with that Schedule A hiring, it would really benefit folks to know who is in charge of the Schedule A hiring with the federal agency that's in their area.
Okay.
And one of the things I definitely have found that when a beneficiary goes from dependency on benefits to self-sufficiency by obtaining a federal position, it really becomes life-changing for them.
I can't agree more with that, Lynn. I think that's pretty exciting stuff. I don't know. I mean, I got to believe there's people out there that are wondering what the heck is this all about, because this might be new to some folks. I don't know. Maybe it's not. But Lynn, this is a great segue to provide people the platform to ask more questions. And I'd like to open that up now, if we could, not only to me or to OSM, but to Lynn, if you want to, pose a question. So I think we should open it for a few minutes and see what folks have to say about this.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register for a question or have a comment, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone.
Don't be shy, folks.
Frank, are there any questions?
There seems to be no questions at this time.
You've left them speechless, Lynn.
I have. You know, I want to share, let me share one more thing with this federal hiring. I'm in the process of preparing and submitting a pass with a customer that's a ticket assignment who lives in close proximity to a federal facility. So, you know, we're just imagining, you know, what potential this actually has for that beneficiary and for our employment network.
Well, that's exciting. I'd like to know more about that as that progresses, if you don't mind. I do see a question, Lynn, in the chat that came in from Gordon, and he said, what would be a good source for learning more about Schedule A? And my personal belief would be talk to Lynn, but I'm sure you can give people some more information, Lynn. Do you have any suggestions for Gordon where he would go next?
Absolutely. If you just simply go into the USA Jobs, they actually have quite a bit of information in there on Schedule A hiring. A contact person that's connected with that federal job would also be able to share with you a little bit more information on the Schedule A hiring and what that process is for their facility. But again, it gives great extra consideration for individuals with disabilities.
Awesome. Thank you, Lynn. Felix, I guess at this point, if there's no more questions, if you could move to the next slide just to show folks some of the resources that are attached to today's PowerPoint materials. These are all... Go ahead.
Pardon me for the interruption. We do have a question from the line of Susan Webb. Please proceed.
Susan?
Hello. Hi.
Hey, Susan.
You know, earlier in the call, Felix said something about what is being done to prepare the AJCs for us. One of the problems that we're seeing in rolling this out is that nobody seems to be paying attention to employment networks. There's a lot of initiatives, like the OFCCP is doing a lot of stuff to educate contractors. VR is all over the place because they're used to them. The AJCs have always been a source of a place for contractors to post their openings. So the AJCs and the VR agencies have already got an inside track. The new rules specifically name employment networks as a bona fide referral source. So we are in this game, but it seems like we're kind of being, I feel like we're being just kind of ignored and sort of dissed, really. You know, we've been involved with this, with SSA at the national level, and it's very frustrating. And I actually have tried to do some outreach with our one-step business person. And I felt like I was just kind of blown off. I'll pursue that some more when I get a moment, but it just seems like we are not being presented enough out there. And I'm just curious, when Felix talked about what is being done to prepare the one-stops for us, what does that entail? Is there like a national training program that the AJCs are getting? And are they understanding who we are and that when we call them that we are bona fide and that we're not a bunch of flacks and you need to listen to us?
Well, let me respond quickly, Susan, and then I'll let Felix respond. But I will say, because I'm part of the training and TA team for the DEI states, yes, absolutely, we're doing things to let the DEI project sites that are EMs understand that other EMs exist, certainly. And we've encouraged that same level of partnering that we're talking about today. But I just want to put that out there that, yes, of course, we're talking about that. We're not in this game alone. In fact, we aren't the majority of the ENs represented. So we're kind of the new kids on the block, to be truthful. So, Felix, maybe you have other thoughts on that.
Thanks. I think, Susan, to be honest, as I said that earlier, I realized, as Kevin just said, with his work with the DEI, in our role, just we ourselves are the operations support manager. We are, of course, our scope is to promote this kind of thing to workforces that are ENs, right?
So the
answer to that question is yes. We have training material for workforces that are ENs, and we talk about partnerships, and we can do all what we can, similar to this call. We of course aren't engaged in any direct kind of promotion to AJCs or workforce entities in general outside the subset of them that are ENs or even considering to be ENs. That's kind of where we get to talk a little bit in that regard. If they're coming on board or considering, we can talk about partnerships. But I don't want to speak for some of our colleagues over maybe in DOL who might be able to talk a little bit more about what they're doing with communication out to the entire workforce system, not just those that are ENs. My impression is that sort of thing is being conducted, and we work very well with some folks there, but I don't want to speak for them without them on the call, so we can try to maybe pull some information together if appropriate and share some of that perhaps later on, or at the very least share your concern that sort of outreach, if it is not being conducted, that it should be, or if it is, maybe there needs to be more of it, or whatever. We can just share the concern that sort of message needs to get out about the ENs, who they are, their availability to partner, even with those workforce entities that are not ENs.
Well, that's the point, because most are not, as you know. And so that's my concern. I think the ones that need the partnership with ENs more are the ones that are not ENs. And that's the majority. And so that was the reason. I always seem to give you guys homework, which is great. I you know, you can consider me your source for job security.
It's great, Susan. It's really great.
But I do think that a conversation with DOL about that issue, that they need to, you know, some kind of information blast or something to explain the role of ENs, and that we are a good resource for them to partner with. And there's all kinds of different partnerships. We've talked about several of those today. So I wouldn't want to dictate specifically what those would be, but just to make sure that all of the American job centers in all the states, not just the DEI states and not just the ones that are ENs, that they all understand what employment networks are, what the ticket to work is, and what kind of value we can bring to the community.
Susan, this is Kevin. I'd be remiss if I did not address that USDOL has keen interest in the public workforce development system engaging in helping ticket holders. And there's actually a training and employment notice that went out to all the centers that talks about employment networks, what they do, and how to get involved. So they are definitely involved, and they have their eye on this. Also, I want you to know that it isn't just DEI state projects that have access to the trainings that we provide through the National Training and Technical Assistance Center. It is for all of the public workforce development system. So we're not really isolating DEI. We're trying to engage the whole system. But to your point, I think there's still more that needs to be done, okay? But I just want you to know that there are things that have already been done, and there's messaging that's already been put out there and continues to be put out to the system at large.
When you send those messages out, I don't want to take all the time here, but when you send those messages out, is there a target for those business services reps? Because they seem to be the linchpin here for us. That those are the ones, because I really loved your idea about partnering with them on events, particularly because of the kind of 503 events that are being done. But we are so summarily being left out of all of those. We're just not there. We're not invited. Even when we ask to be on it, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, the agenda's full.
Well, you know, I spent half my career on the other side of the fence, outside of the system, Susan, so I get it.
Yeah, well, that's why I asked you the question, because you're the man.
Yeah. I think that, you know, it really requires something that Lynn said, and I agree with, which is us to step up. And maybe it feels planted, but I think that's really what we have to do and show that, look, hey, we're the folks with the expertise here. We should be involved in this event. And we've seen some of those events occurring, and I mention that because I like that idea, and it kind of showcases the community-based organization's skill around this and knowledge and participation. So I think that's one way all of us could get more engaged.
So you're telling me I need to do a better job?
I'm telling you, you got to get out there, Susan, and do what you do.
Yeah, well, I'm obviously
well
not doing it right. I'm not doing it right, and I'm certainly one of the more involved ENs in the country, as you know.
I do know that.
Maybe it's just Arizona.
I'd be interested to know, but
I would be interested in others on the call and whether they're kind of getting that same thing. Maybe it is just here. So
Kevin,
I put that out there.
Here?
I missed that last comment somebody made.
Could I share a little bit on that?
Yeah.
I really believe that in building those relationships, I never marketed the employment network. I totally marketed my expertise and became a resource, and the EN just comes with it. But I never marketed as an employment network, but I marketed as an expert and a resource.
Okay.
I think that's a good point. I think, Lynn's in a system, but and Susan's not. So to her point, it's a little more difficult breaking in. Susan, I get what you're saying, but I do think, and I've seen this happen, especially in Lynn's area. That's why I invited her. That there's a great partnership with the private EN. So. I think it's possible. I don't know. It varies based on regions, obviously, and the players involved. So it could be a little bit of that going on.
Okay, well, thanks.
Thank you, Susan.
So we,
Felix, I'm going to turn it back to you.
Oh, thank you. So we are at just about call stop time. I know we started a couple minutes late. Frank, are there any other questions in the queue?
We do have another question.
Just one?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's take that one last one, and then we'll have that be the end of the call.
We have a question from Paul Lutro. Please proceed.
Yeah, Kevin, I just wanted to add to some of the things that Susan was just talking about, because she and I have communicated about this difficulty for the last several months, actually. And one of the things we've been participating in our industry liaison group here in New Mexico, and I don't think that's been mentioned today, but that's something that employment networks and others should be connecting up with those organizations, because they're made up of federal contractors, the human resources people in the companies that are federal contractors. And we were part of a panel presentation a couple weeks ago here in New Mexico on the 503 program, and it also included, besides, I was representing employment networks, and it also included VR and Commission for the Blind and the AJC and a couple of other entities. And it went really well. We were invited to participate by our industry liaison group, who we started to develop a relationship with over the last nearly year or so. And they were very appreciative of us being there. To reinforce what Susan was saying about the lack of awareness, I posed the question to the 33 employers that were in the session, and only one of them was familiar with Ticket to Work out of 33, which was not very encouraging and kind of backs up with what Susan said. I have contacted the ILG national level. They have their national conference in August. I haven't heard back from them, and it might be a little too late to do anything, but just seeing if we could possibly get invited in some way, shape, or form to that. It's in D.C., to be involved in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know if the Department of Labor is going to that conference or not, but it would be nice if they would, and the LFCCP, if either one of those or both of them, could bring up and educate people on the resource that employment networks can be to their 503 compliance needs. And that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Paul. I put a link there too for folks to dig into that more, and I think you're right on track.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks very much, everyone. Kevin, any closing comments?
Well, I appreciated the dialogue today. It's interesting to hear perspectives from folks around the country, and you know, things vary, of course, in different areas. So, but I think and hope that you gleaned some information from today's discussion, and that you'll continue to try to forge those new relationships with job centers in your area. And I appreciate you all attending today.
I'll second that. Thank you very much, everyone, for dialing in. Have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. Have a great day, everyone.